is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines is Friday lunchtime. The recognition of a Palestinian state is said to be on the agenda at talks in Dublin this afternoon between the Taoiseach Simon Harris and his Spanish counterpart. The US restricts travel for its Israel-based diplomats amid growing fears of an attack by Iran. And air defence systems for Ukraine may be put on the agenda of next week's EU leaders' summit following Russian attacks on key power plants. The news in detail now with Vivian Traynor.
The Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has said there are now clear signs in Europe that countries in the region are prepared to recognise a Palestinian state. He made his comments in Madrid before he set off for Dublin, where he will hold a meeting with the Taoiseach Simon Harris at government buildings later this afternoon. Here's Tommy Mescal of our political staff.
The government has been engaged in discussions with several countries across Europe with the aim of building a coalition of support for the recognition of Palestinian statehood. Yesterday, Taoiseach Simon Harris met with his Spanish counterpart Pedro Sanchez at a summit in Poland. Today, both leaders will meet again for a bilateral discussion at government buildings. Topping the agenda, efforts to recognise the state of Palestine. Spain has indicated that it wants to be in a position to do this by July. The pair are also likely to discuss a joint request by Spain and Ireland that the European Commission review whether Israel is complying with its human rights obligations under the EU-Israel Association Agreement. Tommy Mescal, RTE News, Leinster House.
Israel's Defence Minister Yoav Gallant has told his US counterpart that any Iranian attack would require an appropriate response. It follows continued tensions after a strike on Iran's Damascus consulate killed a senior Revolutionary Guard official last week. Iran, which blames Israel for the attack, has promised to retaliate. Angus Cox of our foreign staff.
Tensions in the Middle East are as high now as at any point in recent times. The catalyst, an airstrike earlier this month on Iran's consulate in Syria that killed seven members of Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards. Iran blamed Israel for the attack, vowing revenge, leaving the region on edge. Lufthansa, one of only two Western airlines flying to Iran, has suspended flights there, while Russia and France are the latest countries to warn against travel. Israel is braced for Iranian retaliation, telling the US it would respond directly to any attack. US officials have spoken with Chinese, Turkish, Saudi and European counterparts to warn of the dangers of escalation. Yesterday, US President Joe Biden reaffirmed what he called his ironclad support for Israel, adding to fears that any move by Iran on Israel could spawn a wider conflict.
It's been reported that the issue of air defence systems for Ukraine has been put on the agenda of next week's two-day summit of EU leaders in Brussels following a devastating Russian attack on Kyiv's largest power plant. Ukrainian officials said the power plant, which serves millions of people in the capital and surrounding regions, was completely destroyed in the airstrike. From Brussels, our Europe editor Tony Connolly.
Russia has been targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure now for 2 years. The issue has become a lot more critical because the country is running low on air defence systems, particularly US-produced Patriot missiles. As a result, Russian ballistic missiles and drones are increasingly able to evade Ukrainian defences, causing not only destruction to infrastructure, but relentless civilian deaths as well. Last night, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky desperately pleaded for air defences, saying without them, it would amount to a global licence to carry out terror attacks. A military aid package worth $60 billion has been held up by Republicans in Congress, and that explains much of the shortfall. However, during a debate in the European Parliament, Belgian MEP Guy Verhofstadt said EU member states had between them around 100 Patriot air defence systems and that Ukraine was only looking for seven. Next week, EU leaders are due in Brussels for the last summit before the European elections in June. A number of countries supportive of Ukraine have insisted that the issue of air defences be put on the agenda. Tony Connolly, RTE News, Brussels.
The jurors in the Stardust inquests have begun their eighth day of deliberations as they continue to consider their verdicts into the 1981 disaster. 48 people died when a fire ripped through the Artane nightclub in February 1981. The 12-person jury initially retired to consider its verdicts on April 3rd and has so far spent around 26 hours deliberating. IDA Ireland has said that an AI-enabled workforce is critical to transforming Ireland's enterprise base and supporting future investment in the country. The agency has published its latest Labour Market Pulse report, which is focused on artificial intelligence skills in the workforce. Our Work and Technology correspondent, Brian O'Donovan.
IDA Ireland's Labour Market Pulse report is produced in collaboration with LinkedIn and Microsoft. Data from LinkedIn shows that it's older workers who have the most to gain from generative AI tools. A majority of them are in occupations that could benefit from artificial intelligence, as it would free up their time for more value-added and creative work. The report shows that the technology, information and media sector is the industry with the greatest potential to harness AI tools, followed closely by financial services. The IDA says business leaders will need to be proactive in upskilling their workforces to develop the AI skills and knowledge necessary to leverage the technology.
And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Building a new home? Trust Grant to help you on your heating journey with their home heating design service. Visit grant.ie.
Mostly cloudy and misty today with outbreaks of rain and drizzle, mainly in the west and north. Some bright or sunny intervals will develop by this afternoon, mainly across the Midlands and east. The rain and drizzle will edge slowly eastwards this evening, with a clearance developing in the west and northwest. Highest temperatures of 13 to 16 degrees, warmest in the east with moderate to fresh to southwest winds. Brian.
Thank you, Vivian. Still to come this lunchtime, here in studio, the Ombudsman for Children, Niall Muldoon, on Taoiseach Simon Harris's commitment to do more for children with disability. Families evacuated from their homes in Roscommon due to flooding near Loch Funchina as an entirely new lake appears thanks to the heavy rainfall. Recognition of the State of Palestine. The Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez flies into Dublin as like-minded EU states look to move together. And a celebration of all things Japanese animation in Cork this weekend.
Did you know there's a 1 in 3 lifetime risk of developing shingles? The risk of shingles increases with age and in those with weakened immune systems. Patients describe shingles as a burning, stabbing or itching feeling, usually accompanied by a painful rash. Ask your doctor, pharmacist or practice nurse about shingles and visit understandingshingles.ie to learn more. Understanding Shingles, brought to you by GSK in association with Chronic Pain Ireland.
So, what's on the holiday wish list this year?
Incredible European destinations.
Oh, nice.
Thrilling excursions with expert guides.
Amazing.
Exceptional company.
Of course.
And someone to plan it all for me, start to finish. None of the usual running around.
I'll call the professionals at Travel Department for that one.
Guided group tours to hundreds of destinations with flights, accommodation and everything arranged for you. Book today at traveldepartment.com with great special offers. Travel Department. Let's see more.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. The Ombudsman for Children has said it's promising that Taoiseach Simon Harris has prioritised children with the appointment of a super junior minister in special education this week and the establishment of a cabinet subcommittee on children, disability and education. The cabinet subcommittee is due to meet for the first time the week after next. Simon Harris said the purpose of the initiative is to, as he put it, break down silos between government departments and to deliver real and meaningful reform for people with disabilities. Well, Ombudsman for Children, Dr. Niall Muldoon joins us here in studio. Very good afternoon to you and welcome to the programme. Promising, you say, but how will you judge if the promise has been delivered on?
Well, I suppose for one to see the Minister for Education, Minister for Children, Minister for Disability coming together at a sub-cabinet level is hugely important for us, because we've been fighting for interagency cooperation for years. So progress will be shown by movement in regards to children with disabilities. So for us, the priorities will be to make sure that every child has a place in September. Every child with special education needs will have a place in school in September. And also that we know that their services are being provided properly within the education system. But finally then, the big one is the assessment of needs, Brian, where for many years we've been fighting to get sufficient assessment of needs done for all children with disabilities. And since 2020, when we produced our report on met needs, the Department of Health and the HSE have provided two different, not just one, but two different procedures to assess children's needs that were both found to be unconstitutional and against the law. So we're so far behind now. We're more than 10,000 children waiting for assessments of needs. We need to find a situation in which we provide the services almost ahead of the assessment and the diagnosis. We have children who need the services.
What is the impact on those children and their families of the delay in getting this assessment of need? Because I think is it 7,000 almost are waiting more than 3 months.
That's right. There's over 10,000 waiting, and there's, I think, 93% of them are waiting more than 6 months, which is the legal limit, which they're entitled to have it within 6 months. I'll give you a good example. We have a case in our office now currently of a young 6-year-old boy who's challenging behaviours, acting out in school. The parents are afraid that he may be expelled at that age. Clearly with difficulties that need help, but he's not even on the assessment waiting list number. They can't be told what level he's at, when he's going to be seen, but he should be getting the services immediately. It doesn't need an assessment to say this child needs whatever it is, speech and language, other assistance. We need to move to give the services ahead of the assessment at this point. We need to find a new way of making sure those children are getting the services they require. And that's why when you bang the heads of those three ministers together, it should come up with something quickly.
Yeah. Just on this, the HSE does insist that a child doesn't require an assessment of need in order to access its services. Now, yeah. Is that the case?
That is the case, yes. And again, they need to move forward. But the Department of Education are also trying a separate tack where they're trying to move children to give them education in a way that doesn't need the assessment of need. But again, they're making workarounds as opposed to providing a coordinated service. Mm-hmm. Across education and across health, so that the child is the centre. At the moment, they're all doing what they need for their services as opposed to what the child needs from their services. And that's what we need, the
because particularly in education, it's presumably very difficult to put in place the programme a particular child needs, the supports it needs, yeah. Until that assessment takes place.
Unless you're aware. I mean, again, experienced teachers will know a child of certain autism, perhaps, or certain things they might have met before. They can provide that. But it does help enormously if they have an assessment from a psychologist. But at the same time, there's certain things you can put in place, and that you don't want the Department of Education having to provide their own services separately to the health.
So that's how is this huge backlog going to be tackled? The private sector, is there more resources outside the public sector that can be tapped into?
There's limited resources either way, private or public. But my understanding in my last meeting with the Minister for Disability, Anne Rabbitt, was that she's looking at every possible opportunity to provide her brightest assessments for these children through assessment hubs, bringing in private providers and making sure that the child is given the quickest possible assessment, but the most thorough assessment as well. And I think it is going to be a challenge, but that's why I'm so encouraged by the fact that they're all going to be around the table chatting together to find the answer to this challenge.
And this, you're saying, are you, that this should be the priority perhaps for this cabinet subcommittee and indeed for the new...
Correct. If you can find a system that allows those children to be assessed and to get the services as quickly as possible. So again, when I'm talking about quickly, I'm talking before they even get into education. That means that the teachers and the education service know exactly what they can provide, and it also means the young person has got the early intervention to help them reach their potential within the education.
You also mentioned a school place for every child who has special educational needs. Now, there are well publicised issues around that, parents not able to find a place in their own locality, having to travel perhaps great distances, or being told that's what they'll have to do if they want to find a place by September. What needs to be done there?
Well, again, we reported on this 2 years ago, plan for places, and we're going to follow up on that report now this year. We need to know that the Department of Education has eyes on every child with its special education needs and knows where they're going to go. And again, we can't fathom at times how they can drop through the system where there's a child even coming out of primary school, so they've been in education for 8 years and there's still not a service available for them when they go into secondary school. So we're going to be pushing the Department of Education to make sure that that is the case and let the children and their families know as soon as possible that they have a place. But again, bringing these ministers together to say this is on your head, this is your responsibility for this September, should make a huge difference, because up to now it's been individual servicers trying to provide the best possible way forward. But now the Department of Education are going to be working with the Department of Health and the Department of Disability in the children's section. That should make a huge difference, and we do need to see those places as guaranteed, and as guaranteed as early as possible for those families, because it's hugely traumatic to not know your child has a place coming up.
It seems that recruitment and retention of teachers is one of the issues here, and that even where there are special needs teachers in post, they are, we're told, at times being taken out of those particular classrooms and put into mainstream classes because there are teacher shortages in the school.
Yeah, and that's a real difficulty, because that shows a lack of, you know, provision of the service, provision of support to the teachers in the wider sense, to the schools. That should not be happening. We have limited enough special education teachers who are specialised. They should not be used in that way. And we need to make sure that doesn't happen. We know there's been a population bubble moving through. It's come out of the primary school. The highest level of population is now going into secondary school. So there will be a challenge there. But within primary school, we should not be in that situation. We should have enough teachers to cover our classes so that the children who are already the most vulnerable are not being further brought into difficulties by the loss of their special education.
And because we're talking here, Niall Doon, about children, we're talking about members of our community who can't afford to wait.
Yes.
3 months or six months is a long, long time in the life of a child and in terms of their development.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so frustrating for me. I mean, 9 years in this job, I think probably one of the first investigations we ever did was around disability, and we are still arguing the same toss. The fact that the HSE and the Department of Education have not found a way to streamline this and to provide sufficient services for children with special education needs means that we have damned a generation of those children to not be able to reach the potential in the way that we would have hoped for 10 years ago.
And the enormous strain and stress that puts on families, on parents, who obviously want to do the best they can for their children and have to fight it very often seems every inch of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I meet so many wonderful parents who you think if they had their child fully looked after in early intervention and reaching their potential, the energy that they put into that, chasing those things the child is right to, if they put that energy into other stuff, we could have schools that would have gold-plated quality services. But in fact, they're just fighting every step of the way for every single individual service that the child needs. And that's wrong. We need to say, this child is born with a disability. We know what that disability is. And from here on in, we're going to take over and make sure that you don't have to challenge us again. We will provide all the steps and make it as smooth as possible. That's what the challenge should be. And that's what the new Taoiseach Harris should be putting to the disability subcommittee, say, right, make the education system as smooth as possible for these children and these parents so they can focus on quality of life as opposed to just getting the right they've already signed up for.
Just before I let you go, Niall Muldoon, we had the confirmation this week that the government is going to sign up to the EU's new immigration pact. Mm. Minister Helen McEntee was speaking about it on this station just a couple of days ago. And one of the aspects of that is that there will be fingerprinting now for children arriving in this country over the age of six as part of this EU plan. What's your view of that?
Well, it's something I wasn't aware of until I heard it here 2 days ago. I suppose it's concerning for me. So I'm going to take a look at it. I'm not going to make too much comment on it at this point, but it does seem unusual. I'm not sure where the best interest of the child has been served by doing that. So I'm not going to say too much more, but I think that's something we will have to look at, and we will engage with the minister around that.
She was making the point that it's one way anyway of ensuring that they're not being trafficked, for example. So it's designed maybe to protect them.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure how that works, because that's presupposes that you have a set of fingerprints somewhere else to compare to. So if you have a child coming in, you fingerprint them, but you have no database to compare them to, I'm not sure how you know they're trafficked. So it's something we have to look in, but it's certainly something that's new to me, and I need to investigate it further.
Children's Ombudsman Dr. Niall Muldoon, thanks very much for talking to us on the programme. Flooding in and around Lough Funchna in County Roscommon, north of Athlone, has left hundreds of acres of farmland underwater, forced the evacuation of two families from their homes, and closed three roads in the area. The Minister of Public Works, Kieran O'Donnell, has been visiting the affected area today as flooding spread to the townland of Curraboy. This is in addition to the persistent flooding around Balla, from where local farmer Porrick Beatty has been speaking to Carol Coleman.
Yeah, well, as I said, we're at home, and we're still grateful to be at home, because we don't know. We could be gone tomorrow or next week if the flood defences fail. At the minute, the road is within 4 foot, and then the sandbags on the road, and then sandbags are keeping back a foot of water, and we have a pump running 24/7, and we have a second pump that has just a matter of turning the key, because if the first pump fails, you're only talking an hour and the water could be level with the bottom of the house. So, even 2 hours and the house is washed out of it.
Oh my goodness. So you're like a little island in there, basically surrounded by water.
from looking outside our top bedroom window, because looking out from the bottom bedroom window, you only see sandbags on the road. So when you look upstairs through the top window, it's like an ocean of water. You know, it's massive, sort of.
You live there with your mother in the farmhouse. How is your mother doing?
She's doing okay now. She's upset. Certain days are bad and some days are good. Like, naturally enough, she's upset with it. You know, she does stay in the kitchen at the range most of the time there, because if she's sitting in the sitting room and looking out at the water and the sandbags, it's not nice, so it's not.
And that's the house that your father built for the family?
He would have been disgusted now with this water, because he actually built the house that we're living in at the minute. Like, himself and his brother were builders, like. Okay. So for him now to see the house the way it is and the water all around it, he would have been just disgusted altogether.
This is spreading now to other areas, up to Curraboy. Are you surprised to see this flooding spreading so quickly?
I am and I haven't. I'm not surprised because of the height of it, naturally enough, it had to spread. But I'm just surprised with the distance it has spread. Like, you know, you're talking, it's affecting people now that's 4 and 5 miles away from my house.
Porrick, what do you want to see done about this?
Well, I just want to see the overflow pipes finished and the water levels brought down. Like, they're on about bringing in measures to pump the water. But, like, that's stupid, because all you're doing is more diesels, more generators, wasting more money, when in the long-term solution, the pipe is the only answer. And when the pipe is done, it's done by gravity. There's no pumping, there's no minding. Put a valve on it that the water isn't flowing too fast, at a steady rate, to cause no problems further down the line.
Do you think, as a young farmer, that you'll be able to stay on your farm and in your house into the future?
Well, I very much so hope so, because in 2020 I invested in a sheep shed and I got the Young Farmers Grant on it, and I'm still paying the loan for another 3 years. And if the flood defences fail or the pump fails, that shed will be flooded. I've invested quite heavily now at home in the farmyard, you know, because I'm young and, you know, and I want to be at home and farm away, so I do.
And just finally, what advice would you have for those new homes and farms who are now having water come up into them over in Curraboy?
It's a horrible ordeal, so it is. It just genuinely is a horrible situation to be in. I don't know what to say to them. I don't know.
Farmer Porrick Beattie there speaking to Carol Coleman. Well, let's talk to local councillor Lawrence Fallon, who was among those who met the OPW Minister Kieran O'Donnell when he visited the area this morning. Councillor Fallon, thanks for taking our call this lunchtime. Can you first of all give us a sense of the scale and how unusual this particular flooding episode has been? Because I think you're seeing areas flooded now that would rarely have ever been flooded in the past.
Yeah, we have an extraordinary crisis unfolding. Now, it's actually going on since 2015. This was a very valuable special area of conservation, Turlough, which in winter level would be 600 acres. It then increased to 1,300 acres this year. But the most extraordinary thing that happened was about 10 days ago, it reached a level that allowed it to flow into a different direction, into towards the village of Curraboy. And it's now flowing in there to an area which is about a metre lower than the top of the lake. So it is inevitable that a metre of water will develop in that particular area, and that will bring another 100 or 150 acres into the equation as well. On top of that, it has also created a problem for a number of houses, including one very seriously, and the other one cannot get into their farm. So this is an extraordinary situation we're in, and it's a crisis that needs to be fixed, and fixed very quickly.
So this is an entirely new lake. Is that right, that's forming as a result of the scale of this flooding?
What's forming in the last number of days is there was a small pond that used to develop during heavy rain. It was a slightly low-lying area, and now we find that Loch Funchan is actually flowing into that, because it has gone higher than the barrier that was between the two areas. So it's flowing into a new area. There is a very significant road that will have a metre of water on it in a couple of weeks, because this piece of ground now is going to rise to the same level as Loch Funchan, causing untoward hardship for another group of people.
Well, now, I think there were solutions over the years that have been put forward to this winter flooding. Is it too late to implement those kind of measures, or can there still be a resolution to this?
This certainly can be done. There was a solution devised by the OPW and Roscommon County Council. It was the provision of a pipe of about 3 kilometres long in the direction of Loch Ree, and that would remove the high water, to set at a high water level, so it was only going to take any water that exceeded the normal winter flood. 75% of that was complete when the Friends of the Irish Environment brought a High Court action to have it stopped. That was in 2021. And now we have got to a much more serious situation. It is inevitably almost a metre higher than it was then. So we need that pipe more urgently now than ever. Today we have the Minister looking at it, and we are urging him to find a solution and find a solution very quickly.
Well, obviously that's not going to deal with this immediate situation. So what about the families who've had to be removed from their homes, the land that's been flooded, the roads that have been closed? What are you hearing about how long it might be before those waters recede?
Well, it's an extremely difficult situation, because it is my opinion that those waters will not succeed until such time as we get this pipe installed and get water removed. The lake has now gone out of kilter. So even with the driest summer we might expect next summer, the lake will not recede low enough to get it down below a high normal high winter level. Therefore, when we come to next winter, we can be certain there will be an incremental rise on what it is right now. So this is a problem that keeps getting worse and worse every winter. And without the pipe, there is no possibility that those people can ever live in peace again. And I have no doubt, if we don't get that pipe installed to remove some water from the Turlough before September, we would have lost the village of Bala, and we would certainly have lost a number of houses in this Phelim, and we'd have lost a number of houses in Curraboy as well. Right. Just the fact we would have totally decimated NSAC.
Councillor Lawrence Fallon, thanks for talking to us here on the News at One. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has said there are clear signs in Europe that countries in the region are prepared to recognise a Palestinian state. His comments come ahead of a bilateral meeting with Taoiseach Simon Harris at government buildings this afternoon. The recognition of Palestinian statehood is to be the key focus of that meeting. It'll mark the second time in a week that the two leaders have held discussions after they met in Warsaw yesterday at a summit hosted by the Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk. Let's talk to Suzanne Lynch now, Chief Brussels correspondent with the Politico website. Suzanne, what's happening in relation to this question of recognition of a Palestinian state by not the European Union, but by a number of EU countries?
Yeah, I think there is a movement that's gathering steam among a number of European countries to recognise the Palestinian state. Spain and Ireland have been at the forefront of this, but also smaller countries, Slovenia and Malta, as well, and an indication that maybe other countries could get on board. For example, Norway, the Spanish Prime Minister is coming to Ireland directly from Oslo, where he was meeting the Norwegian Prime Minister, and the Norwegians too have indicated that they are preparing to recognise a Palestinian statehood. So definitely a movement towards this recognition, but I don't think there is any possibility really that the EU will do so as an entity, that the 27 EU member states will do it together. But within the EU, yes, there is movement in that direction.
Well, now, obviously, individual member states are free to recognise whatever states they choose. But there's also this question of the Israeli trade agreement with the European Union, which is a collective agreement. And we know that there was a joint letter from Leo Varadkar and Mr. Sanchez to the European Commission looking for a review of that. What's likely to transpire? What is happening in relation to that trade agreement?
Well, so far, the European Commission has not responded to the request by Ireland and Spain in that letter, which was sent earlier this year. Simon Harris was asked about it yesterday following his meeting with Ursula von der Leyen. This is an agreement that kind of governs trade relations between the EU and Israel. It entered into force back in 2000. But there is an article in that agreement that states that relations between the two should be based on respect for human rights. So this is what Ireland or Spain are zoned in on. they are asking or requiring an assessment from the European Commission as to whether or not this clause has been breached. Simon Harris did suggest that this would be perhaps up for discussion, I would say, at the next foreign ministers meeting. There's another foreign ministers meeting here in Brussels on April 22nd. I don't know if it will come up next week. There's an EU summit on, but it's going to be hard to get that on the agenda. I would say it may be one for foreign ministers, but no developments or progress really on that yet.
You mentioned that EU summit next week. Reports this lunchtime, Suzanne, that the question of air defence systems for Ukraine may be one of the issues on the agenda. This following, of course, the overnight and more recent attacks by Russia on Ukrainian targets. Is there likely to be a move to try and provide some further practical military support from Ukraine from the EU?
Yeah, I think a lot of countries want this on the agenda next week. There is real concern now about the state of play in Ukraine, these new bombardments by Russia, as particularly at a time when the United States has still not agreed in Congress to provide that aid to Ukraine. So there's been a big push. Donald Tusk, for example, even last night during his meeting that Simon Harris would have been at with Charles Michel and other leaders, raised this issue as well. So I would say it will be on the agenda. The problem is, though, again, it's how much the EU can do collectively. Individual countries are doing a lot. Even Germany, there's been a big change there. But just this week, Hungary, for example, has said that it is not prepared to send any weapons, more weapons to Ukraine, even air defence. So you do have countries for different reasons that are still opposed to that. But it does look like it will be on the agenda next week.
And also different points of view, different divisions even within the European Union on this question. I think it was raised by the French, wasn't it, for funding, EU funding, collective centralised funding for defence and security. Our own minister, I think, at a meeting of finance ministers, Michael McGrath, has been saying today that Ireland doesn't support this.
No, it does not. And this was the last summit. The discussion was about how to fund this collectively, how the EU could maybe increase funding in some way to help Ukraine in the defence space. What has also happened and what they were discussing in Luxembourg at this finance minister's meeting was using the European Investment Bank, which is the EU's bank, if you like, to change the rules there in some way that funding there could be channeled into defence. That's something that Ireland, you know, would not really be in favour of. Not all countries would be, but we had a very strong call from Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, those eastern countries, to look at that mandate by the EIB. So that is another issue that will no doubt be discussed as part of this broader discussion of Ukraine next week.
Suzanne Lynch of Politico, thanks very much indeed for that. After the break, we'll be hearing about some difficulties faced by the British Labour Party's deputy leader from George Parker of the Financial Times.
Morning fresh espresso under cypress trees. Cruise glistening seas around the island of Capri. Family fun in the Sicilian seaside sun. Pizza making on a piazza by ultra-chic boutiques. Sighing at the bridges of Venice. Lake Garda. The Dolce Vita savouring a Sorrento gelato. Pompeii. The perched pastel houses of Positano. Like floating lights. And of course, Rome. There are many sides to Italy. We'll help you discover them. Top Flight. Book your Italian holiday at topflight.ie.
RTE Radio 1.
The Black Keys, live in concert. Three Arena Dublin, Friday, May 3rd.
Baby, I'm howling by you.
Tickets available now from ticketmaster.ie. The Black Keys, live at Three Arena. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
This week on Playback, we have ourselves a new Taoiseach.
Result, Paul, 88, Neil, 69.
I confirm, therefore.
The godfather of AI sounds a warning.
How close are we to the point do you think that they're smarter than us?
My best guess would be that sometime between 5 and 20 years from now, they'll get smarter than us.
Ooh. And on Liveline, none of your trendy Jacks or Graces here.
My mother's name is Gupness, and my name is Gupness, and my daughter's name is Sarah Gupness, and my niece is Aaron Gupness as well, so it's a family.
All the governance on Playback this Saturday from 9.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. Greater Manchester Police in England have begun an investigation into the deputy leader of the Labour Party, Angela Rayner, over the sale of her council house. She's been accused of breaking electoral law by giving false information about her main residence. Now, George Progress, Financial Times political editor, he joins us on the line with more on this. So, George, tell us what's been happening here. This is a result of a complaint by a Tory MP.
Yes, I mean, there was a book written about Angela Rayner by a former Tory treasurer called Michael Ashcroft, which looks into her living arrangements back in the early 2010s. So it was just before she became an MP and began her meteoric rise to become deputy Labour leader. And what they were looking at in particular was this question about whether she was living in the house that she sold or living with her partner in a different house. Now, that's important because if you sell your house and it's not your primary residence, then you're liable for capital gains tax. She didn't pay any capital gains tax on the property. So the question of whereabouts she was actually living as her primary residence at the time is important. And the fact that Greater Manchester Police today have said they're investigating whether any offences have been committed about the declaration she made about her primary residence is a significant development, I think.
So on the one hand, there's this question of whether or not she should have been paying tax as a result of the sale of the property. But then there's also an issue raised about where was her residence from the point of view of the of her electoral entitlements, you know, as a voter.
Exactly. So she had to declare where she was living for the electoral register. And she declared that she was living with her then husband at a different property. And also said she was living at the property she sold. And so there's a bit of a discrepancy about where exactly she was living at the time. And the neighbours, some of the neighbours have been talked to by journalists and by investigative authors who say that she was living with her partner at the time. And as I said, that's important because if she was not being straight with the electoral authorities about where she was living, that could have implications for whether she was due to pay tax on the sale of this her house, which was just down the road from where her husband was living.
So, George, how much concern is there in the Labour Party at this, or is there maybe a view that it'll blow over eventually?
There is concern about it. Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, repeatedly asked about this when he goes off on campaign visits. He was very tetchy yesterday when he was asked about it. He was asked whether he was 100% confident that Angela Rayner had done nothing wrong, and he refused to say whether he was or not, and then got rather snappy with the journalist who pushed the point. So, you know, it is concerning for the Labour Party. It's been going on for an awfully long time. And obviously, despite the fact that Angela Rayner says she's been smeared by her political opponents, the fact the police are now investigating this, I think, will be seen as a vindication by those of her who've been pursuing her on this.
To what extent would this be a crisis for Labour that would deepen if the revenue authorities were to launch their own investigation?
Well, it would be a very serious problem. I mean, we are getting one step ahead of ourselves here, of course, speculating on that. But it would be a problem for the Labour Party. Angela Rayner has been one of those politicians who's been particularly vocal in calling for high standards in government. The sort of Labour MP who will call for Tory ministers to resign in a flash if they've done anything wrong. So the Conservatives view her as being guilty potentially of double standards here in potentially not being straight about where she was living at the time, and therefore she's fair game. But it's the kind of scrutiny that any opposition party will face, you know, going into an election as they hope to make the transition from opposition to ministerial office. And what Angela Rayner is suffering here will be the kind of thing that all Labour front benches will be subject to in the months ahead.
George Parker from the Financial Times, thanks so much for that. More than 2,000 people are expected to attend Kazuko Con at University College Cork this weekend. It's a convention dedicated to science fiction and anime. Organised by UCC students over 3 days, it'll celebrate Japanese animation across panel discussions, workshops, music events, a charity auction and a trade hall featuring artwork, books and collectibles. Well, to tell us more, we're joined on the line now by Manan Nazar, who's convention director. A very good afternoon to you, Manan, and welcome to the program. So I suppose you better explain to our listeners who aren't familiar with this, what is anime? What is Japanese anime?
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, so Japanese animation, you know, this anime, it's just, they're just cartoons. They're like, you know, like good story cartoons, stories like sci-fi stuff, like, you know, like your Star Wars stories, all like animated. And we have some mainstream ones, you know, like Attack on Titan, Jujutsu Kaisen, all these really good ones that people really enjoy. And so, they enjoy, yep.
So who'll be coming to the convention then?
People of all ages who just like sci-fi and anime, and people who just like to come see our events. We have orchestras. We kind of have something for everyone, you know, orchestras, cosplay competitions, gaming tournaments, voice actor guests who come over.
Yeah, sorry, cosplay is dressing up as some of the characters. Is that right?
It is, yeah. So people love to dress up as, you know, your favorite characters. So people like Darth Vader and all this stuff.
So it's not exclusively then Japanese science fiction and Japanese animation. It is a bit broader than that. But the Japanese anime is a particular niche, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It used to be very niche, and like only like 10, 20 years ago, but then it gained popularity when this stuff came towards West. And now people, we have just growing numbers every year, and people are coming here. We've been running for 10 years, and every year people just come and they enjoy their time.
And what's the particular attraction, do you think, of the Japanese genre?
Oh, it's definitely the art style. The art style is very unique, and people like that paired with, you know, a good soundtrack, good story, good characters is what really like gets people to like this stuff. And then the convention provides a space for people to talk about their opinions, to see all their stuff, to meet their favorite guests who have voiced in these characters that they so love.
Right. And will you be taking part in the cosplay competition yourself, Manan?
Maybe. Right now it's busy organizing, but we'll see.
You don't have a costume in mind or something in a cupboard ready to don, no?
Oh, we'll see at the competition, yeah.
Okay, well, listen, it's good to talk to you. Thanks very much for taking our call. That's Manan and Nazar there from the KatsukoCon.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Alice, good afternoon to Andrew Connor. Andrew.
A very good afternoon to you, Brian. Starting with golf, and play on day two of the Masters is well underway, with the conclusion of round one being played in bright sunshine there. Shane Lowry has already completed his first round in the last few minutes. With that and the rest of the news from Augusta, here's Greg Allen.
Yeah, the bright morning sunshine, quite a contrast to the high winds of yesterday. Just light breezes today, and it does look like the weather is set fair for the remainder of the Masters after that storm passed through early yesterday morning. Shane Lowry resumed on the 17th, where he chipped and putted for par, but then on 18, while he struck two really fine shots to 35 feet, he finished with three putts from there. A really dispiriting finish for a closing bogey. So a 1-over par 73 for Lowry. At least he gets a chance to make that up pretty quickly, because he has a swift turnaround, because he's underway in round two in the next half an hour. Tiger Woods has resumed as well. He bogeyed the 14th, his first hole back upon resumption, and he's on level par, now playing the par 3 16th. One significant round completed in the last few minutes is that of the Denmark Ryder Cup player Nikolaj Højgaard. He closed with two pars this morning for a 5-under par 67, and that leaves him alone in third place, one shot behind second place Scotty Scheffler, the world number one's on 6-under, with the leader Bryson DeChambeau on 7-under par after a 65 yesterday. Rory McIlroy has a late tee off time today. He's on 1-under par, teeing off at 7:12 tonight.
Thanks, Greg. The IRFU and Munster Rugby have confirmed today that the Ireland captain Peter O'Mahony has signed a new one-year contract with the province. The 34-year-old stepped down from his role as Munster captain in November, but the former Lions skipper will serve at least another year with Graham Rantree's side, who were knocked out of the Investec Champions Cup last week and sit fourth currently in the URC table. Leinster have made two changes to their team for tomorrow's Champions Cup clash with La Rochelle, with Will Connors and Jason Jenkins coming into the side. Josh van der Fleer and Ross Maloney drop to the bench for tomorrow's quarter-final at the Aviva Stadium. A repeat of the last...